Casey Bell is well known in education circles for helping educators shake up learning, find new ways to connect with students, encourage them along their learning journey, and encourage teachers along their professional learning journey. Casey is a speaker and an author, and a popular presenter at our TCEA Convention and Exposition, this year presented with IdeaCon. And she joined us for one of our morning kickoff meetings, a kind of open discussion of what's on the minds of attendees, educators, everyone who is involved in our convention, and our TCEA members, not to mention educators at large. And in our conversation, we talked a lot about how learning has gotten shaken up in this past year in many ways we might not have anticipated. But Casey's point of view can help us understand how we can change, how we can shake up the way we learn and the way we teach. And since our morning kickoff discussions didn't make it into the recorded sessions during the convention, we're sharing them with you here as members of the EdTech Club. So this week's guest speaker is Casey Bell of Shake Up Learning. She's going to talk to us about the changes we've seen, how teachers are reacting to it, and what they need to keep in mind moving forward. So don't worry, it's a forward-facing discussion. It's about the lessons we can take moving ahead and the opportunities that lie before us. And if that sounds maybe overly optimistic to you, well, keep listening. We'll get into that. And we'll get into a whole lot more as we talk about the changes in education and how we can change for the better in the future. That's all with our guest speaker, Casey Bell, live from the TCEA Convention and Exposition this year. And it all starts right now. Hey everyone, welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. I'm Andrew Rausch. You already know it, this week's guest speaker is Casey Bell, and I won't build up to it anymore. Here's our conversation with Casey.
How are you this morning?
I am doing well, yeah.
And how is your, you're starting to dig into our convention, and of course you have attended TCEA before, you're well known in the Texas EdTech community. What is it like attending this virtual conference for you?
You know, I was actually complimenting TCEA earlier that this has been the most well-conceived and organized that I have participated in so far. And so I feel like you've done such a great job of putting this together, of giving us the ways to connect. And, you know, I do miss the faces. In fact, in the chat, sending some virtual hugs right now. And I do miss seeing all of my friends. And there's so many people that I know at TCEA. It's always like a big teacher family reunion for me. You know, it's just like, you know, walking down the hallway. Oh, yeah, because I've worked with so many different schools and so many different places and been to TCEA for so many years. But I really think that this has been a great level. Y'all have set the bar for what I hope some other conferences will begin to model so that we can do the best job we can when this is the only way we can connect.
And, you know, please forgive the pun, but you've been ringing the bell on EdTech for years. You have been an advocate for it even before it was, as I said, you know, a necessity. It must be interesting from your perspective to talk about EdTech solutions for years and then go to a situation where everybody has to embrace these solutions. What are your reflections on this last, you know, 12 months or so in terms of the efficacy of EdTech? I mean, I know we've had struggles with virtual learning. We've had struggles with schedule changes and style changes and all sorts of changes. But we must be learning something about EdTech and virtual learning that we're going to be able to carry forward, right?
I think there were some hard lessons that were learned by many. And I feel like a lot of schools who had embraced technology, who could see the future of EdTech and set the groundwork and the expectation that these tools were important. They were important for learning. They're important for our students. Those schools have fared so much better when we had to go online, even though, you know, it was a, oh yeah, you're on spring break and you're not going back to school kind of thing. There was no prep time, but making that shift, I did see a lot of schools who handled it in a much better way because they were more prepared for that. They were prepared for the digital divide that they have in some equity issues in certain areas. And they were already, you know, at least in the planning phases, if not implementation, to get hotspots out to kids to figure out, you know, the innovation that we've seen in the midst of this crisis has been amazing. Mm-hmm. And teachers, as I have said many times, have been donning their superhero capes and taking a lot of punches. And I've been pretty upset about that. It has been something that, to put it in a Texas way, gets my goat. I just, you know, I've been pretty angry myself with the way teachers have been treated and how this situation has evolved. But in the midst of this, I do believe the crisis presents us with a huge opportunity. That's how I'm choosing to look at it. You know, I try to stay as positive as possible, but the opportunity we have before us is to make important changes in education that we've needed for decades. The things that I have been touting for many years now are suddenly ringing much more true in this post-COVID world that we're in.
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago, I started a project with some friends about optimism. And I'm the kind of person who took that as a challenge. I thought, oh, you're going to make me talk about optimism? All right, we'll see where that goes. And then in the middle of that, this pandemic happened. And then in the middle of that, a lot of social unrest, a lot of protests, and a lot of social justice movements sprang up. And then in the middle of that, we had an election and this and that, and then all our schedules changed and the way we teach changes. But in fact, in that process, I think I came to a better understanding of optimism, not as, you know, the rose-colored lenses that say everything's going to be all right, but rather kind of an attitude that says, even if it's not all right, I can figure out a way to keep going and perhaps do things better.
And that is completely true. And I think a lot of teachers who are surviving in this moment are clinging to that they are just trying to continuously improve, which is a growth mindset, which we all need. And, you know, I think if you've had that mindset all along, then you have been able to handle this much better than those who really have been resistant to change for so many years. With what I do and the tips and the resources that I offer online, it became that nice to have to that need to have situation. And a lot of kind of tech newbies were flocking to my site for help. The questions that I was receiving were so much more basic because those newbies were finding, and they're like, you know, I've never used Google Classroom before and suddenly I have to use it. You know, what in the world do I do? How do I make this work? And, you know, I love the fact that teachers shifted gear so quickly. I don't know many professions who could have survived what we just survived. Right. I have never been more proud to call myself a teacher and to be part of a club, even though we have been beat up pretty horrendously over the last few months. But I also feel like that there are so many ways that we can use this again to pivot, to do something different, to think differently about our roles as educators, as administrators, as schools. Some of the deeper problems that we've always had in education and the over focus on testing and the grading systems that needed some work have come to light through this. You know, the spotlight has shown up on equity problems, on devices. You know, how many schools did I see who just had to go buy Chromebooks? They didn't have enough, like in the moment, and then just hand them out and hope they come back. You know, it was just, okay, this is what we got to do. And this is an emergency situation like none other. And I'm sure we will all refer to the year that we survived. Still crossing my fingers that it's just a year, but yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm thinking there might be coaches, instructional technologists, folks like that, watching this session, who might have kind of a similar role to you, helping people understand the kinds of tech tools that might fit their teaching needs. You talked a little bit about how when this all started, you're getting this influx of totally new questions that are, I have to learn this LMS and I have to learn it before Monday. You know, those kinds of panic-inducing moments. From your perspective and trying to help people get connected to the tech that they might find most useful for their learning outcomes, how did you have to pivot? What changed for you or what jumped out for you that you made you realize, oh, I need to go this way or that or focus on this or that?
So the biggest change was I didn't get to travel and see everybody face to face. But luckily, I was already doing so much online that I could sort of pivot in that moment and just do more there to offer, you know, the webinars and the virtual trainings and things like that. But what's been interesting and somewhat frustrating is the demand to replicate what I would do face to face, which is the same thing that teachers are being asked to do. And I think that has been my biggest shift. Like I am flat out refusing to deliver a 6-hour workshop in the same way I would deliver a 6-hour workshop face to face. This right here, this Zoom thing is really tough to do and to stare at synchronously. I think that has been my biggest pet peeve, and both on the student side and for the teacher professional learning, like y'all, Zoom fatigue is legit. And we have to really shift gears and get teachers to see more asynchronous ways to learn. Now, a lot of teachers' hands are tied because their schools are requiring so much synchronous connectivity.
Right.
I have seen kids, you know, parents posting online with their kindergartner who's required to sit in front of a screen for 6 hours a day. I mean, that is just wrong. So, you know, I'm just like, y'all, seat time does not equal learning. We need to move to evidence-based learning. We need to move more project-based learning, things that we've been talking about for years that work in this moment. But this idea of synchronous versus asynchronous, yes, we still need, like you and I, we're synchronous right now. But the ability to record these sessions is what is making this conference work. That is making it an asynchronous learning opportunity. And so I've been telling teachers, record everything you do. If you have permission of, you know, if there happen to be students on the screen or whatever, but record everything, even if it's live, because we all have connection issues. You know, we lose internet, we lose electricity, whatever's going on, that we have to do that. But we also have to think of how we design our learning experiences to make sure that we aren't boring our students to death with this idea of just being synchronously connected and lecturing to them. And, you know, I have even seen teachers posting if, you know, the boredom that they are experiencing of just being sent to another Zoom breakout room, like, you know, that we're clinging to these little innovations that we've had, which have been great, but then they get overused or they're not implemented in a meaningful way. So if there's not a purpose behind that, if there is not a way to connect the dots back to the learning goal, then we need to rethink what we're doing. And that includes whether it's face-to-face, it's online, it's blended, or this horrendous idea of concurrent / hybrid thing, which I just think is a nightmare.
Yeah. You know, I think the folks agree in the chat, by the way. And I just saw in the chat, Stacy says, you know, this pandemic kind of forced teachers' hand in a good way, or rather forced teachers' hands onto useful technologies, maybe. And so before the pandemic, you were trying to shake up learning. You're going to be trying to shake up learning after. So what does that mean to you? I mean, it's going to be different, right? Or is it just the same and you're trying to accelerate the right changes? What's your perspective on, let's say, broadly, moving forward?
I think a little bit of the latter, you know, that it's not really that anything that I'm saying is all that different from what I was saying before the pandemic. This idea of seat time that I just said, that was something I have said for a long time, especially for professional development, because I have been told myself, even though I had already completed everything I was supposed to do in a project-based learning workshop, I could not leave because I had to have the seat time in order to get credit. And I think that's just baloney, y'all. Right. both sides of that. But there are things that are evolving out of this moment that I see the future shifting in terms of the role of the teacher. I interviewed a teacher a few weeks ago on the podcast. I can't remember the number of the episode, but it's called The Future of Teaching, and more so the future of online teaching. And Morgan Longteen was hired back in the fall before school started to specifically be an online teacher and not try to do this, both thing, to do two jobs at once. And she loves it. And the conversation that I had with her, I think, really helps me understand the possibilities of this. And y'all, being an online teacher is not a new thing. We've had distance learning for decades. It started out as correspondence and then it evolved. And, I know in my school districts, when I first started working in instructional technology, we had a special room for distance learning and it had all this expensive equipment in it, but now you can do it from any device. So why has it taken us so long to really see the value in this? But coming back to the idea of the online teacher, I really think those need to be specialized roles because they are very different instructional strategies. What works face-to-face doesn't necessarily work online. And a lot of teachers experience that firsthand. They're like, okay, I'm going to take this thing that I used to do face to face, and now we're going to try to do it online. And it's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. Or my favorite, when I get asked, how do I put my worksheet in Google Classroom? So, there's so much more that we can do to use the tools at our disposal to do new things. But, engagement and helping students learn in new ways. And of course, this is the way the world works. This is how our students will connect for many of their jobs. I mean, this was happening before the pandemic, and obviously many companies who didn't understand, oh, this works and we don't have to pay for a building or we don't have to fly everybody all around the world. This is a huge shift. This is a big marker in our history, not just for education and for teaching, but also for many other aspects of the entire world and the economy and just the way the world works. So I do hope that more schools will see the value in creating these special roles, because I believe parents are still going to demand this option. I don't think the online home learning thing is going away when we get the pandemic under control. I believe parents, and many parents are already still demanding it, even when kids can go back. They don't want their kids, or they like the flexibility. And Morgan's kids in that podcast episode, she had kids who were thriving in that environment. Mm-hmm. She also had kids who didn't, who went back to face-to-face. There is a personality type that works well in each of the environments, and there is a type of learner that works better in those environments. In an online environment, we've got to have more autonomy. We've got to be self-directed and have some self-motivation to do that. And that doesn't work for every student. But coming back to what you were saying earlier, the ability to differentiate and to meet the needs of all of our learners, this is just one more way to do that.
Yeah, it makes you think that, some of the principles we've known, principles with a P-L-E, not PAL, some of the principles we've known for a long time, not everyone learns the same. You're going to need to differentiate strategies for different students or different types of students. We've known those for a long time. We accept those as true. And we can expand that thinking, right? That not every teacher is going to have the same skill set. Not every educator, they might be able to role specialize. And another thing we've done for ages is allow people to role specialize. We let educators specialize by age level or grade level, by topic, by what they teach. It would make sense to extend that to the ways they teach as well. And as you say, there are going to be people out there who prefer a virtual learning environment. Maybe they live in a really rural place and getting to and from school every day takes 3-4 hours of their day or something on a school bus. I could see that pretty easily. I have a friend here in Austin who has 2 daughters and they're about middle school, early high school age. And she's thinking, I'm going to take one out of school and just have her finish this year through a virtual program. But the other one is actually thriving, going in or so people will always have, different options. It makes sense to allow this kind of role specialization.
And, the other thing to remember, just kind of seeing some of the comments that are coming in, is just because a student is the online student or the virtual student doesn't mean that every activity they complete in their learning process has to be on the screen. I think that, we talk about asynchronous, but also off screen time. And I don't know if Laura Steinbrink is still in the chat, but I had Laura on the podcast early in the pandemic and she's in rural Missouri. And what she did was she took some of the choice board templates I had online and she created choice boards that were hand-delivered, printed and hand-delivered to her kids because they live so far out in the country, they can't get connected. And she created online and offline options so that those kids could still participate and still complete the assignment and reach that learning goal, even if they didn't have the screen in front of them. So I think that's an important part, not just for the remote learning emergency pandemic issue, but screen time is definitely something that we have to measure and think about for ourselves, but for our students and how we do that and use that wisely.
Now, as you think ahead, what are the tools that you've seen become really useful to folks right now that you think will continue to be useful in, virtual, whether it's part-time virtual, maybe, whether it's a supplement or whether it's the full deal for some students. Have you been surprised or maybe not surprised that certain tools have become really valuable in this time?
Maybe not surprised, but I have seen, a lot of schools embracing Zoom. Zoom has become, I feel like, a verb. It's mm-hmm. not just, it's my preferred method. It's become the preferred method for many schools. Not that there aren't other fabulous platforms and y'all know I use Google, but that has been obviously how we're making this conference work. So having that video chat connection, whatever tool that went from, again, the nice to have to the need to have, and our tried and true tools that many of us used in a blended learning environment, but transferred really well. Of course, that's like the Google suite and the Microsoft suite and all of those tools that we can rely on, that we know how they work, and keeping that consistent, because obviously it's really detrimental to throw a bunch of new tools at kids in an online environment. You need to find a very good balance of how to do that. You don't want them to get bored with the same thing over and over again, but we got to sprinkle in the new stuff and make sure that we're not going to run into any issues. But I'll tell you the one tool that I think I loved before COVID that is just really come into play. It's been clutch in the moment is Flipgrid. Flipgrid has just been amazing and they've added so many new features. It's super easy to use. It works at any grade level and it lets us still have, even if it's an asynchronous connection, it still allows us to have that video connected moment, and reflection being such an important part of the learning process. I believe Flipgrid is like my number one choice for reflection, but I really think that has become one of my favorite tools of the pandemic is Flipgrid.
Yeah. I saw a TikTok yesterday. I try to keep up with teacher TikTok and there's some good ones out there. If you're ever hurting for an ed tech solution, just follow teachers on TikTok. You'll find all kinds of stuff.
Oh yeah. I'm on TikTok. I'm there.
I mean, it's a world of it out there. And I think I saw one yesterday where a teacher was like a first grade teacher and said, this is the favorite part of my job. And it was just these pre-recorded messages from the students that say, hello, Mrs. So-and-so, this is my assignment. I'm turning it in. And then they you know, say their reflection or whatever it was they were supposed to do. And there's something fun in that, getting to hear everybody's voice when you can't see them all the time. But there's also something about the sense of asynchronous learning that might be really beneficial for some students. I can imagine, you know, I had no problem getting up and speaking in front of the class, as you can, this is what I'm doing now. I'm speaking in front of the class. But most people probably don't enjoy that. And so being able to maybe say in your own words, your reflection or whatever the task you're doing is, and not have to do that on the spot, publicly in front of your classmates, that must be an advantage for some learners.
And I think that online aspect was something that many of us saw even in the face-to-face classroom, that if we had an opportunity for students to respond electronically, that they would tap into those students who didn't want to speak up in class, whether that's a chat or, you know, that's just a comment, or if that is a visual. And of course, with Flipgrid too, you know, they've added so many features. You don't even have to do video, because some kids don't want to be on video. I know it's hard to imagine with so many kids recording their faces all the time, but, you know, being able to have the audio option or to put the little emoji over your face and to give them that sense of security so they can still participate. And I would say the same is true of teachers. You know, even in this moment, there are many teachers right now who are watching, who are not in the chat, who don't really want to participate in the chat, but they're still learning along with us. And so again, sort of learning about ourselves as learners in this process as well.
Okay. So let me pivot off of that.
Okay.
What have you learned about yourself during this time? Yeah, that's right. We're getting introspective now.
I think I've revealed this enough that I think most people realize this, that I am an introvert. And even though I'm perfectly comfortable speaking on a stage or just like we're doing right now, it takes a different amount of energy for me. That's how I kind of look at the introvert versus extrovert. And I was probably much more okay during the lockdown than a lot of people. And so I learned a lot about myself, as I'm sure many people did, in terms of having this, okay, we can't go anywhere. We can't really do anything. And we all have different survival skills, of course. Still miss the face-to-face interactions and things like that. But as a learner, I also know several things about how I learn. And I will read before I watch a video, which I think is part of my generation, but it's also part of what I had to do to survive school, because that's what I was given. And so I always try to remember that even though video seems to drive everything now and seems to be a choice for a bigger majority, that we provide those multiple types of media in terms of supporting things online. Like, just posting a video is not enough. Like, how are we explaining it? Are we adding the instructions? Are we adding a visual? Are we adding a chance to reflect or to collaborate in that moment? And so thinking about those things. So I know that's partially just learning about myself and, you know, working with other students and learning a lot about my family in the process. You know, my sister was, she was around somebody who had COVID. And so she had to quarantine. So Christmas happened over Zoom in my family. I was actually at my parents' house, but she couldn't be there. So we had two families connected and opening presents via Zoom. And I think you learn through this process so many things about yourself, how to survive a pandemic, how to keep your mental sanity as well. I think we all kind of went a little stir crazy for a while and ready to get out. But that learning process for me, I think, has been highlighted. Like, I knew certain things about myself. I knew I was an introvert. I knew how I prefer to learn. But seeing this in a virtual environment and coming to light and trying to remember that as someone who delivers professional learning, that I'm meeting the needs of the learners in the room as well.
Absolutely. Shout out to all the introverts in the chat. much love to all my introverts out there. You don't have to respond, introverts. It's okay.
They're not in the chat anyway.
No, they're lurking, right? And just watching. Have there been new things that have emerged over the course of this pandemic for you? I mean, there's a lot of tools that were there, as you say, that were starting to get built. Obviously, there were a lot of folks and a lot of folks, the kind of folks who come to TCEA who were thinking about these things in a kind of, this will be nice to have in the future. We should build these systems. Is there anything you weren't expecting that has popped up during this this lockdown, this change in everything period, that was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that everyone was going to be using this, or I didn't know that this was going to succeed or fail so spectacularly?
I don't know that I was really surprised by anything. I think the in terms of tools, I think the surprise came with the innovative ideas coming from teachers who were sharing, and the ways that they had to organize their day, the ways that they had to build relationships with their students, which we still know is the number one thing we have to do that's going to impact learning. And how in the world do you build a relationship with a student that you never see? I think the ways teachers have had to pivot in the moment and find ways to do that, the protocols, the procedures, setting up the school day, the really creative way that teachers embrace this idea of a checklist, which, I mean, let's be honest, that's not like a crazy idea, but that was something relatively new I saw emerging as something that just drastically helped everybody. Like, oh, this is a great way to organize it because kids can keep track of this, and seeing it used pretty much at every level. The daily checklist, but more so the weekly checklist. And I think making that bigger shift to looking at learning from a bigger picture instead of the day-by-day spoon feeding to students. The other shift I would say that I've seen that's been really important is the shift to rigor. You know, busy work is still busy work, whether we're doing it online or not. And letting our parents and students know that, again, of course, this kind of comes back to that see time idea. But, you know, if a student can show us evidence of what they are learning and that they've reached that learning goal, then that doesn't mean they still have to just keep doing this busy work, that we can keep progressing. And I think more teachers are seeing that than they would normally in the classroom, because the classroom has other distractions for us. You know, we're facilitating and we can see things differently, but at the same time, kids often have ways of making it look like they're busy or doing things. But when we can peek in on what they're doing online and give them that instant feedback and creating those feedback loops that are so important, which to me has always been one of the biggest selling points of having digital assignments and making sure students are still on track, has forced teachers to use that as a tool and not so much waiting until it turned in and then realizing the kid didn't understand at all and wasted all that time working in the wrong direction. So I feel like more so the opportunities have been just in a better understanding of instructional strategies, of assessment strategies and things like that, as opposed to tools. And as I've said, you know, I love technology and I love the fact that so many companies came out with free versions, at least for a while. You know, there was this huge list going around. I'm like, y'all, I don't really want to promote this list because one, you're going to find something you love and then you're going to have to pay for it because you know it's not going to be free forever. And the second thing is it's never about the tool. This is still about the learning. And that's why those things that we use, yeah, we have to have tools to deliver it. And there are some amazing things to do that. But in the bit, you know, like creating a Bitmoji classroom is awesome. Creating an ombre background for your slide to make it beautiful, great. How does it affect the learning? If you cannot tell me how these things support the learning, then we need to start all over, because that to me is always the bottom line. So I hesitate to just like point the finger at the tools of the, you know, the industry of the ed tech industry. They are there and there's so many amazing things coming out, but I learned pretty early on to stop chasing the next new thing. One, you can't keep up. There's just no way. Right. So, you know, I just try to pay attention. And yeah, I do go create accounts and learn things, but I don't want to share that with teachers until I know how it supports the learning.
Mm-hmm. And you talk a little bit about this feedback loop of you know, giving feedback to students, getting feedback back from students. If I have had to adjust to a remote or a concurrent or a hybrid teaching method, am I trying to do two things? Like, do I have to deploy two different strategies for creating and closing that feedback loop?
Not necessarily. I mean, I feel like a lot of blended learning strategies, you know, things that I talk a lot about, if anybody's read my books and the dynamic learning framework, those are things that translate into all of the environments. There are things that we can do face to face, and there are things that we can do even in an online environment. Of course, you know how much I love Google tools, and using the private comments in Google Classroom, say, that can be used whether I see you face to face every day or if you're a kid online, in terms of that feedback loop. And I can still check in on your Google Doc to see how you're progressing, if you're going in the right direction, and leave you feedback there before you turn it in. In either case. So I think that's why I love those types of tools so much, is that it does allow us to do that. And I think just keeping in mind, I don't know, the idea of blended learning to me is kind of been our goal in the most part for the last several years, and it having, of course, a different meaning now, but a lot of those strategies do translate. But again, I feel like so many teachers think they have to reinvent the wheel instead of just thinking differently about their assignments. That was something I talked about, I guess it was yesterday. I have a post on 7 ways to rethink digital assignments, because just making something digital doesn't mean that it's any better. In fact, it can often be worse or more time consuming or confusing. You know, I watch teachers try to turn their worksheet into a Google form, and then I want you to ask yourself, you know, is this going to help the learning stick? Is this the best choice for this? Is this something that would be better as discussion? You know, coming back to everything we know about, okay, assessment. Is this a formative assessment? What am I assessing? And making sure that I keep everything clear to know what my students are supposed to be doing, and that they know what they're supposed to be doing. And students should know the learning goals. I'm also a huge proponent of making sure, do students know why they are doing this assignment? I know most of the assignments I completed as a student, I had no idea why I was doing it. And we have to have that conversational language with our students so that they understand the purpose. And of course, if we've got parents at home helping, making sure that that's posted in the assignment. So I kind of went all over the place on that answer, but there's just so many pieces to the pie, yeah, that are useful. And I think when we come back to fully face-to-face, that a lot of teachers have gained some new skills that are going to help them in that blended learning environment, as opposed to just the remote learning environment.
Now, before I let you go, I want to grab a question I just read from the chat here. A virtual teacher wants to give feedback. I want to give feedback to all my students, but it's very time consuming. What are some creative ways that they can give feedback? And that makes sense, right? You go to that class list. It's like, wow, this is going to take a while. What's an effective way for a virtual teacher to do that feedback?
It is. And I think it's one of those things, kind of like relationship building, that it's an investment, and it's going to have a big payoff when you invest the time to leave that feedback. My advice is oftentimes to stay focused on your feedback with one or two learning goals. Like, for instance, I was a writing teacher, and, you know, trying to read a piece of writing and assess it for everything in the world, grammar, spelling, composition, that would take forever. But when we are focused on, okay, this was what we were learning this week, this is what we're assessing this week, so this is how I'm going to give the feedback. So if we stay concise, that will help. Other tools like Moat, that is a Chrome extension that works with Google Classroom and in other places, allows you to leave voice comments. For some teachers, that might be a time saver. For me, I think it would take me longer because I get super chatty in leaving the sure. voice, right? But leaving the voice comments can save time. Also, setting up that comment bank in the Google Classroom grading workflow that they have, there's a comment bank. And so all you do is copy and paste, because we do find ourselves oftentimes saying the same things in terms of feedback. So there are little shortcuts that save us. I also love to use auto text expanders. So I use one that's a Chrome extension, and I set up little keywords. All of mine start with a semicolon. That's kind of my trigger. And so when I find myself writing the same things over and over again, I will just set up that auto text expander, and you can use that as well, just to, I mean, it can be an entire paragraph, and it can include links. And that's something else that I think is really important when we give feedback. Say there is something wrong, you've got a comma splice. Well, instead of just saying here, you've got a comma splice, you need to review it, here's a video. Go review this skill. So give them the resource as you're giving them the feedback. And of course, require that students take action on that feedback before you give them a grade. I'm also loving the idea of delaying the grade, because how many times did I give students feedback and they didn't do anything? They just resolved the comments. So making sure that they actually do something with that.
Excellent. Well, we are, the clock is ticking away, but I want to give you a chance to give us when you'll be speaking for the rest of the week, if you have sessions coming up, or ways that people can catch you online where they need to find you.
Sure.
Plug your upcoming films and all the books coming out. Just let us know where folks can find you.
So you can find me at shakeuplearning.com. You can find my schedule and links to all of my slides at shakeup.link/TCEA21. If somebody wants to drop that in the chat, that's just the shortened link. I had so many sessions, I couldn't embed the slides on the page, so they're all linked separately. There is also a free book study on that page. So my new book that just came out, Blended Learning with Google, I made a special group just for TCEA participants. It's completely free. So you can find me there, but connect with me on social media, send me your questions, any way that I can support you. I am more than happy to do that. And I know I have so many familiar names in the chat. It's really good to see everyone virtually and to be here today.
Okay, it was a long discussion. I hope a fruitful one, but we are running up against the clock. So if you want a little extra credit for being a member of the EdTech Club this week, go ahead and check out the links in the description of this episode. You can find links to Casey and her work, some of the things she mentioned, and find new ways to shake up your teaching and learning. Besides that, keep an eye on TCEA on social media. We have a lot of events coming up, especially during this summer, with courses and certifications and our elementary technology conference, and more. It's all coming up. And the best way to keep up with it is to follow TCEA on social media. Of course, if you're an avid follower of the EdTech Club, don't forget to make sure you're subscribed to get new episodes every week, and that you share the show with others who might like it. But that's enough from me. As I said, we are just about out of time. So I will let you go until our next meeting of the EdTech Club. Until that time, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to TCEA.org.